Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, good, because I was not prepared, unlike Megan, who's way more prepared at life than me in general.
That is never true.
Oh, hi, I'm Kimberly Adams, and welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we try to make today make sense. As you can probably guess, Kai and Molly are out on their well-deserved vacations. So joining me today on the show is Marketplace's Megan McCarty Carino. Thanks for being here.
So excited to hang out with you a little bit this week.
I know, we should totally have cocktails, but save that for Friday. So, we're going to do a little news fix, a make me smile, and then we're going to call it a day. And Megan, I think you should go first with your news fix.
Okay, thank you. Everyone has their eyes on Amazon this week, and today the votes are done for this union election in Bessemer, Alabama, at the warehouse in Bessemer, Alabama. But there was actually another Amazon labor story that happened today that's kind of related to it. And so I wanted to talk about that. The vote ended today. They're going to start counting tomorrow. Could take several days to know the outcome. But today I saw that the National Labor Relations Board found that Amazon illegally fired two activist workers. And I had to kind of, dig into this a little bit further because I was like, wait, which workers that were activists that Amazon fired? Because there's literally been, I think, more than a dozen that have filed complaints with the National Labor Relations Board in the last year. And so there have been a number of, folks who have spoken out about warehouse safety and, just so many issues that have been fired and have claimed that Amazon retaliated against them. So these two are actually kind of, white-collar tech workers that were fired for speaking out about climate change, which was the big deal that was the subject of the Amazon walkout. If you remember, way back in 2019, this happened.
This was
one of the cases. Right. I remember, I was doing a lot of reporting as the workplace culture reporter on tech activism. This was the huge thing. Amazon workers were calling for better action on climate change, and they had this walkout. And so these two workers, they had led this group of Amazon workers who, led this walkout, a number of other actions. And then they also spoke out about warehouse safety during the pandemic. And Amazon said that they had violated internal company policy, communications policy, that they had spoken to the press about Amazon, about their work without getting permission, and that is why they were fired. But the National Labor Relations Board found that they were retaliated against. And so, I've been kind of looking at this wave of activism, obviously, that we're seeing in terms of the warehouse workers and so many essential workers during the pandemic, and looking at, like, what are the connections between the white-collar kind of tech worker activism that we saw going into the pandemic, which hasn't really been the focus, but was the focus for these two Amazon workers. And the interesting thing is that I think when we look at the case of Bessemer, Alabama, kind of what the union is rallying around there, it does seem to be less about wages. Amazon does have a $15 an hour minimum wage, which is much, much higher than the minimum wage in Alabama. And they have
benefits,
medical
wage,
and all of that stuff. Which is $7.25. So wages are not a huge focus of this fight, or benefits. And same with these kind of white collar tech workers. You know, they were really fighting for just the right to speak out about things that mattered to them, not necessarily the things that we have traditionally thought about under our labor law as working conditions, you know, which is usually wages, benefits, hours, and that kind of stuff. And similar thing with the union in Bessemer, Alabama. They have really spoken a lot about the kind of dehumanizing way that Amazon runs these warehouses where they have these trackers and they're constantly being surveilled. And then I think this whole dialogue that has erupted online over the bodily functions, you know, I mean,
right. So this is Amazon kind of getting it from all sides in terms of there's the big tech backlash, you know, from members of Congress that has been building for a while. They've got one of their big warehouses in Alabama, as you said, unionizing. We're going to get the results of that vote this week. The NLRB saying that they unfairly retaliated against some of their white-collar workers. And it really does seem to be that Amazon, which has been allowed to get really big over the last, you know, few decades, is now, what, when one of the articles you linked, it's what, the second largest employer in the country now?
Right. It's the second largest private employer in the country, I think, after Walmart.
It will be very interesting to see how that union vote turns out, for sure.
Indeed. Yeah. And I think, you know, whether it succeeds or fails, these kinds of issues are not going to go away for Amazon.
Okay. Well, speaking of issues that do not go away, we still cannot stop talking about the pandemic and the vaccine rollout. And my news fix is about vaccine hesitancy. Now, early on, a lot of people were very concerned that people of color, particularly Black people, were going to have vaccine hesitancy because of all the suspicion about the healthcare system for very good reason. But recent surveys are showing that it's not really Black people that are hesitant about getting the vaccine. It's white evangelicals. And it's such a concern that health officials are now saying that this may really compromise our ability to get to herd immunity because white evangelicals won't take the vaccine. And I guess this really spoke to me, that these couple of articles I've seen about this, because, I mean, you know this, Megan, because we've talked about it. I went to school at a white, predominantly white evangelical school from the time I was in preschool until I graduated from high school. And the relationship with science was complicated, to put it mildly. And I can just very much imagine how the conversations about vaccines would have happened in that context. And there are all of these evangelical leaders trying to convince their congregations to take the vaccine, bumping up against some of the folks in the white evangelical community who are expressing a lot of skepticism and going after these conspiracy theories. So take the shot, people. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it really speaks to with, you know, with these influential evangelicals kind of not getting through to a lot of this population is just sort of the breakdown of expertise, of kind of authority. You know, I mean, we've seen just such an explosion of people just really resonating with, you know, kind of alternative sources of information. And I
or misinformation.
You know, I sometimes... Yeah. I mean, and I don't think it's only on, you know, kind of one political end or another. I mean, the whole follow the science thing has become so convoluted during the pandemic. We've had just like, I mean, I follow a number of scientists on Twitter. I have a whole list of COVID scientists. They're all fighting with each other. So follow the science is not necessarily always, you know, kind of the panacea, you know, statement that I think we've kind of thought of it as, is just, you know, people are, there's a real breakdown of kind of like who to listen to. And if these, you know, prominent evangelical leaders are not getting through, I don't know what can.
Yeah. I mean, yes, there's a lot of healthy scientific debate. I do think that we are getting clear information now in a bit more of an organized way than in the previous administration from the CDC, from health officials, from the White House. It's a much more consistent messaging, but
yeah,
come on, people, get the shot.
And that stuff matters for sure. Yeah. That messaging from the top, I'm sure, really, I think about how the pandemic has played out and, you know, that maybe there always would have been a lot of polarization of science and of different things. But when you get kind of sustained messaging from the top, I'm sure it makes a difference.
All right. We've had two downer topics. Let's go to the happy place. Megan, do you know what day it is?
I'm pretty sure it's Monday when I woke up. I thought it was Sunday, but that was a rude awakening.
Well, this will make it better. It's First Contact Day.
Wait, what?
First Contact Day. Come on now. Be a nerd with me. It is the day in Star Trek lore when we make first contact with alien species, with the Vulcans. In the film First Contact, which is a newer of the Star Trek films in the overall arc of Star Trekkiness, but it is one of the prequels, and it shows when we had first contact with aliens, the Vulcans, and it's supposed to take place on April the 5th, today, but in 2063. So we're not quite there yet.
Okay.
But it's First Contact Day, so all the Trekkies and all the space nerds can be very excited and happy. And if I hadn't put it in storage out of despair of when I would ever wear it again, I'd be wearing my Lieutenant Uhura costume right now. But I put it away because
why pandemic. Would you put such a thing in storage? I mean, you could be wearing that every day during the pandemic.
I won't say that I didn't wear it on multiple occasions, you know, while working, but no, not today. All right, what's your make me smile?
So, like, which is your favorite? Like, do you have a, you know, a Star Trek kind of, like,
Voyager?
Okay.
What about you?
No, I'm sorry, I have nothing to add to this dialogue. I maybe caught some Next Generation growing up on the TV, just like randomly here and there, but I'm gonna get it for this, but I'm not very knowledgeable about Star Trek.
I have to admit, I need to watch the newer series because most of my pandemic binging has been anime, but I do need to catch up on some of the newer Star Trek series. But it's like, I don't know, so many different streaming services and like all of the dollars going out. I can't have everything. All right, what's your make me smile?
Okay. Well, kind of in the vein of, you know, aliens and the Earth, like, being invaded by aliens. So I guess this year and within kind of the next, like, few weeks, apparently, is going to be a major cicada fest in Midwest, Southern, Mid-Atlantic states.
Yep.
And these cicadas have been just chilling in the earth for 17 years. You know, I know like some cicadas come out every 13 years or something. These cicadas, they've been chilling for 17 years and they're going to come out and just like have this, you know, do their cicada thing, go in these crazy clouds of billions and billions of cicadas and cover the entire sky and cars. And so, I mean, I think this is cool. I personally have never experienced the insanity of just like clouds of cicadas, but I think it sounds cool. And so I was reading this Atlantic
article
about
the
cicadas.
Until you start walking on them.
I know. It does. I can see how it could be like probably a bad thing, but from afar, it sounds neat. On the West Coast, we don't get cicadas. We get like all kinds of other bad, you know, crazy
fire,
things, but no cicadas. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, which, by the way, we had some earthquakes this morning, and I did not wake up for them. Slept right through the morning.
I don't live there.
But the thing with the cicadas is they, you know, it's like we're all cicadas this year in 2021. We've just been like waiting in our little earthen, you know, habitats, just like just like nurturing ourselves off of like the dirt, and we're just like waiting. We're just waiting to like pop up and like get out there and just go crazy like cicadas and just like be totally chaotic and orgiastic. Cause I guess the cicadas, they come out and they mate.
Yeah,
and it's just this total mayhem. And so I feel like we are all cicadas right now, and hopefully our story of 2021 doesn't end like, I guess, cicadas.
I was gonna say the
bit of a
that's
sad
not a
end.
Good arc. That's not a good arc at all.
Yeah,
it's a big party and then they all die.
Well, yeah. Let's hope that doesn't happen.
I don't want that. I have to tell you though, I was talking to my uncles about my uncle David's about the cicadas this weekend, and of course,
oh, you were.
And of course, my non-biological Uncle David says to me, "You know, your Uncle David ate cicadas. You know, he caught him last time around, and he cooked him, and he ate him." And I was just like, "That
another reason to be joyful about cicadas.
They're edible protein.
I'm sure he cooked them in a very complex and delicious way, as the Davids will do."
Yeah. No thanks. Hard pass.
Very good source of protein. Very crunchy.
I'll be very interested to hear if anybody in the audience has eaten cicadas and what they think of them.
I guess there are people that are like cicada fans and they get super amped up about when the cicadas are coming, and they get, you know, they try to go find the cicadas. So I want to know if you are a cicada lover or a hater. I have no standing in this argument because I don't experience cicadas, but I want to know.
I'll catch them and put them in a box and send them to California for you. I won't do that, actually. All right, that is it for today. We've gone long. We have to, like, keep it to the time, or we're going to get the Kai Sai, like, from a distance, just remotely. Megan, you're going to be back later this week, but tomorrow it's going to be me and Andy Euler for a deep dive on what's happening at the border with this latest wave of migration, and it's being driven by a really complex set of factors, one of which is economics in Central America. So if you have questions or comments, you can reach us at makemesmart@marketplace.org. Okay. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera, and our digital producer is Tony Wagner. Erica Phillips writes the newsletter and the Make Me Smart explainers.
Today's program was engineered by Garrett Lang. Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. The senior producer is Donna Tam, and the executive director of On Demand is Sitara Nieves.
Would you eat a cicada, though? Would you try it?
Oh, I would definitely eat. I've eaten grasshoppers. I've eaten grasshoppers in and out of chocolate. I would eat one.
I tried mealworms once. It was not a great experience.
I've tried silkworms. They were kind of smelly. Would not try again.
Yeah, I get the sense that my uncle is probably going to bully me into trying cicadas at some point in the next couple months.
I look forward to the David cicada creation.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.